Hey, Wonderfuls, welcome to episode 418 of the JV Club with my simply marvelous guest, Eric Balfour. I know we're not quite into Boys of Summer yet, but I really wanted to get this episode with Eric recorded and out into the world because it is part of our attempt to support publicity for Country Comfort, which is a show we worked on together that we absolutely loved doing. I know you're going to love this episode. It's so fascinating. Eric is so terrific, and it gives us the chance to give some love to the show, and we encourage you to do the same, be it on social media, even if it's not a show for you, which, by the way, I would have thought it was not a show for me until I did it, worked on it, have now watched it, and I love it so much. Recommend it to other people. You know what I mean? Let's get another season on Netflix. And then I would be remiss if I did not say I am very excited for Max Fun Drive to begin. It starts next week. We have so many wonderful things in store for our Max Fun supporters. If you already are a supporter, we love you and thank you so much. If you're not able to support monetarily, you know I still love you. You can do other things to support Max Fun Drive. So check out the info we're going to be passing along next week as the drive begins. And always feel free to leave a positive iTunes review too to help the show get more love there. All right, Wonderfuls. I will talk to you soon. Yeah, and I'm recording the Zoom just in case of some kind of colossal fuck up on either one of our parts on our locals. So we'll
that's
have
that's kind of my specialty is colossal fuck ups.
So. I know you were was that your first band, Colossal Fuck Ups, or was that somewhere deeper in?
Okay. Colossal Fuck Ups was
great.
My first band.
Great.
It was cool because it was like, you know, mostly like 12 and 13 year olds. It was a boy band.
Uh-huh.
Actually, it's kind of apropos for 12 and 13 year old boys.
I mean, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. Although that would be like this, like maybe like the skate punk boy band, which
I don't know what that sounds like. Is that like
Misfits? It's like 12 year old Misfits covers.
I think it started as the Circle Jerks. So.
Oh, good point. Good.
That
point.
Was a real. I mean, that was a real band.
Oh, for sure. Oh no, yeah. I had a huge crush on a kid named Adam all through high school, who was very, very shy, who was like massive Misfits, Circle Jerk,
Did he have bangs?
Oh, for sure. Had bangs, carried a skateboard
fantastic.
Around. Like everything was, you know, a big baggy, like black shirt, but like long sleeve shirt, but then also a black t-shirt over that.
That's
and skate shoes, and would just sit and doodle like dripping skulls.
I love it.
I don't even know how skulls drip, but somehow his skulls were always dripping.
I mean, if you skate
and snakes.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I love it.
You don't meet those, I didn't meet those girls very often. There weren't a lot of chicks who were.
I had one.
Did you?
I had one. Oh my God. Okay.
Lucky.
I'm gonna, real quick. So it was fifth grade.
There is no real quick. This is the podcast. So you can say whatever you want for however long you want.
So I was in sixth grade. I don't know if I'm allowed. I don't even know if she exists. I don't know. I mean, maybe she's changed her name and gotten married. But anyways, I'll say it. So sixth grade, Dearborn Elementary. Her name was Kristen Tiongson. She was so fucking cool. She only wore denim skirts and metal band t-shirts.
Yeah.
Every day. Every day was either Metallica, Megadeth, Iron Maiden. It was awesome. And she was so hardcore about her love for metal that one day in class, they were doing some kind of like cultural something. And the teacher played country music.
Wait.
This wasn't a pun.
Yeah, we'll just fast forward past why that would be happening.
Yeah. So they started playing country music, and it was so upsetting to her dark metal soul that she cried in class. It's so upset, you know, the demons inside of her that she cried. I was obsessed. I was obsessed with her, and we were boyfriend and girlfriend for almost an entire week.
Anything that lives past a week at that age, there's something going on. And nice. I had that. I mean, I had a sort of quote unquote long term relationship
like
with
a whole month or like the entire summer, something like that?
I mean, listen, by sixth grade, I feel like sixth grade was really the best of times and worst of times in terms of my experience at school. My boyfriend, Barrett, who I did have on the podcast several years ago because we are still in touch. He and I had a real tempestuous, like both of our parents were, you know, like separated and angry, and we were angry.
Yeah.
And we just make out, like out on the baseball field, we just make out in sixth grade, just vigorously, but like no tongue, because you don't know. So it was just like mushing, like mushing for just hours.
It was just face slamming.
Yeah, just full face liming.
Fantastic.
And I definitely had like weird feelings of, you know, there would be times where we'd be like making out in one of our rooms, and our parents, I think, were just so either preoccupied with whatever there was going on in their own lives, or just assumed like they're children. I mean, they're children. Who cares if they close the door? But we'd be making out. Again, nothing, no petting, nothing like that. But I would still suddenly be struck with this like incredible feeling of guilt and discomfort. Like, oh,
really?
Am I? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember being like nine, and her name was Melody von Zernick. I don't know why I'm so obsessed with all their names. Somehow it makes it more, you know, I feel like it makes it more up.
Yeah, oh, he said the last name. More real for everybody. Yeah. It's real.
But Melody von Zernick, I was nine, she was 12. We spent most of our time skateboarding together, and we had the same haircut. But I was obsessed, and we got to fool around a little, but then she left for the summer, and another girl down the street, Lori Whiskerson.
Also, these names are great.
I know.
Sound kind of like they belong inside a novel of some kind. Like,
yeah.
Emily Whiskerson. I love you, Emily.
Yeah. But Lori Whiskerson showed up.
Sorry.
It's okay. I'm not offended. She showed up and that was my first, I think technically at nine, I sadly cheated on Melody with Lori. It was heavy. But to be fair, like, you know, I was being seduced by a 13-year-old I had no ability or skill set to fend off that kind of assault.
Right.
Seduction. It was beyond my years.
It was beyond your years. Wait, now so where's Dearborn? Are you
I'm from here.
You're
I'm
LA.
From Los Angeles. Yeah. My family started out and they came here. We had some of our family was from here, was Native American Indian, and other family came from France and Russia. But my mom's side of the family, which was Russian Jews, they settled in East LA in Boyle Heights. East LA in the 1920s was this melting pot of lots of different cultures.
Sure.
It was Hispanic, but it was also Korean and Russian and, you know, everybody. And it wasn't until they started building the 5 freeway down there and the 110 and separating East LA culturally from the rest of the city that East LA became a predominantly Hispanic neighborhood. But, you know, we can do a podcast on racism and gentrification later.
Yeah, those are long conversations. But I will say...
Yeah, so I'm from here.
Yeah. And Boyle Heights really is, I mean... You know, that is truly, I don't want to say it's mythic in the sense that I certainly don't want to turn it into like a storybook or a novel or a movie in the sense of everything that you just described, including the incredible racism and just conflict. And don't even get me started on the Chavez Ravine and like building Dodger Stadium and stuff. But those are really intense times and, you know, zoot suits all of that kind of stuff is fascinating. I mean, that I could just read like a 2000 page book on Boyle Heights through the ages.
It's fascinating.
A fascinating area.
Yeah,
that's great. So do you have that sort of feeling about like that sort of fierce LA pride of I'm one of few people who is, you know.
Yeah, my son. So, you know, my Oliver is fourth generation Los Angeles. It's sort of a rarity.
It is, yeah.
You know, my friends, you know, except for my friends who are Mexican are like, yeah, I don't know anyone who's been here as long as you guys, like, except for us.
Right, right.
It's unheard of. But yeah, so I definitely, I am an LA kid.
You know, yeah.
Lakers and surfing and all of it. Yeah.
Well, that's, I mean, again, like, I'm totally mythologizing you, even though I keep saying I'm not going to, but because that's one of the things that I talk about a lot that comes up in conversation a lot is all of these different, massively different and large and rich and cultured communities that span the basin, basically, that you can have all of these different experiences of Los Angeles. And, you know, like being in Boyle Heights is not the same. It's not equivalent to being in Los Feliz in the 20s and making movies in Hollywood land. And like, yeah. So the fact that you've touched all of these different key sort of amazing pieces of LA that sometimes don't intersect for a lot of people is kind of remarkable.
Yeah, it's interesting because we you know, we live over on the west side now. We live in Venice, and you know, I think my mom, you know, my parents, you know, my mom had a house in the Valley, and my grandparents were, you know, later in my other side of the family in Burbank, and I just found my way over to Venice, but my mom was actually like born in Venice or grew up for a few years in Venice because my grandparents moved there. But, you know, it's been like, we've gotten to see all different kinds of sides of the city. You know, I have family in sort of all different places and lifestyles. And so it's been really neat for me. And it's something I hope that you know, Oliver gets to see too, because, you know, the city is becoming more and more segmented and sort of tribal. And so it's a challenge, you know, like I, my biggest fear is that I end up with this, and I raise this boy who doesn't have any understanding or empathy for other people and cultures and places. And so we work hard to make sure.
Yeah. Step one is the fact that you're even concerned about it at all bodes very well for him, you know, because the fact that you're thinking about it already implies, I think, action. Not.
He's already so much cooler.
You're like,
than
I mean, we've never let him leave our house. Did I not make that clear? He's actually never left the house.
That kid is so much cooler than I will ever be. I'm obsessed with him.
How did he do? How's he done in the pandemic?
We were really lucky. This has been an amazing experience for us. He was young enough where he didn't really. It didn't really change his life very much because he was just barely starting to like venture out to parks and kind of play with, you know, play date friends. And you know, he's only 2 years old.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, you know, overly debilitating for him. You know, it wasn't like he was in school and having to now do Zoom classes. So really all it was Ollie got more of mommy and daddy, a lot more.
Yeah.
My life changed so much when he was born anyways. It was kind of a strange, unexpected blessing because, you know, like we're constantly, you know, as an actor, you sort of go, okay, I'm waiting for the next job. And in between there, you have to sort of keep your sanity.
Right.
So you're like, well, I'm going to, you know, develop this and produce that and try to get this going and do that. I'm going to write this thing and then I'm going to go meet this thing and you spin your wheels a lot, partially just because you hustle just because, and I don't even know, like sometimes the hustle just was just a way to keep your sanity to feel like I have control of something.
Yes, 100%.
I'm setting this meeting, I'm working on this project, and no one can say I can't or didn't give me the job or didn't do the thing. But it also creates, you know, for me, it created a lot of like, I was just sort of all over the place and a lot of different things. And when he was born, it was like, oh, well, no, nothing. Nothing is more important than him. And so all of a sudden it actually made life easier because I was like, oh, Whereas before, like some guy that I'd known for da 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 and was like, yeah, we're producing a movie. You want to read it and maybe come on as a producer? And then I'm like, yeah, okay, I guess I could do that.
Right.
Now you're like, oh man, I love you, but appreciate you, but no, I need to.
Yeah.
If I'm not making a living doing it, or it's incredibly meaningful to me artistically, creatively,
right,
it's not worth spending a minute away from my son. And that became the calculation. And so it made life really simple. Like, it was like, I don't feel bad about missing out on things or parties or events or jobs. Like anytime I don't get a job that's out of town, I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Because there's that fine line. They're like, you're not gonna go audition for this, Eric. I'm like, I mean, it shoots in South Africa for like a year. They're like, okay, but I'm like, right. I guess I need. Okay. Right. You're right. I need to.
Those feelings are, again, there is like a wonderful power to being able to say no and to picture what your life is going to look like without that thing and be very, very content, if not relieved, that it is that your life is going to look more like it does than it would if you had gone to South Africa. And there are periods of time in our lives where, whether we're in show business or not, like for many of us, that is hard to accept that it feels like the best possible scenario is this adventure that you're going to go across the seas to go do. And how could things staying more or less status quo, how could that be better? And then if you're in a point in your life where it's kind of better, what a beautiful feeling.
It's
touchstone,
It has been the most, for me, it's been the most healing thing for my soul. Because I mean, how long have you been doing this?
Oh God, not like you. I mean, I was.
She's like, not as long as you've been trying.
No, I mean, I moved down here in 2005,
okay.
I think.
So, I started in probably 1990, I think, I don't know, 3, something like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been watching you and stuff
I was 15.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I mean, it's whenever somebody asks me about it, they're like, Oliver, they're like, he's so cute. You should let him do commercials or get into movies. I'm like, hell no.
Yeah.
Because as much as I love what we do creatively, when you're doing it, there's something about our industry that is sort of unavoidably soul breaking to some degree. And maybe there's people, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's people who it doesn't affect them. The rejection, the sort of judgment, the inspection of you, sort of objective as an object.
Yeah.
As a brand, it never settled for me.
I
have never known how to work towards a role or work on a show without investing everything. So when I didn't get the job, or the movie comes out and it's not a massive hit, or the show gets canceled, I had no ability to not have it break me. And so it absolutely affects me as a human. Like, I know that I carry a certain level of like just self-doubt, because I'm like, oh, I'm not as good as them. I don't, and I got this big nose and I got this long face and I got this weird da-da-da. And I'm like, all I ever dreamed about was looking like, Chad Michael Murray or somebody. Uh-huh.
But surely your whole career, other people have been telling you that you are so, like, to be so unique looking but still so handsome and still, I mean, like, that's, I mean, I'm not saying that's like massively important, but it is certainly nice to, especially if you're younger, probably does pay off to stand out a little bit, because if you did look like Chad
poor Chad, I mean, it's actually bless what me. Am I saying, I'm not poor Chad, he's, it's a compliment, guys.
Yeah.
Handsome as fuck.
Yeah.
But no, so when I think about it, like, I now realize, like, when I was 15, I started and I was sort of a fluke, and then I slowly but surely found my way into it. And then by like 18, 19, I was like, yeah, I really love doing this. But And I started, I applied to colleges and I got into UCLA and I couldn't afford to go because I would sort of, what happened was I started going and then I wasn't auditioning for like a guest spots on this, which, you know, at that time, you know, you do a $6,000 or $7,000 guest spot and then there's a residual and that gets you through the year.
Absolutely.
At that age, that, you know, because I left home at 15. So I was like, you know, I need that money. And so I went to school and then realized very quickly, I was like, oh shit, I can't afford this. So then I had to like take that quarter off and I'd already paid for it. And was like, oh, this isn't. So it just, yeah. I was like, I just need to work.
Yeah.
But in hindsight, you know, like I would have gone a very different route. I would have gone, if I tell kids all the time, I'm like, go to film school, learn how to edit, learn how to write, learn how to, you know, light, you know?
Yeah.
So you don't, you know, I mean, if you can control your destiny and, you know, like, think about it. Like, you know, when was the last time, when was the last time somebody like Woody Allen got auditioned for something or got, like, forget audition. He doesn't audition, obviously. But when was the last time Woody Allen got offered a movie before finding out that he was, you know, a giant creep? But
right.
I would beg to argue that, you know, he probably never, you know, like, right. who's what studio is just going like, hey, let's get Woody.
Yeah.
Like Woody Allen made his own movies. He wrote them, he produced them, and that was his career. He never, for very often, you know, except for raising the money to do them, had to, right. you know, and the whole, I'm going on a tangent, but the whole process that we go through, it's so strange. I actually love where we are right now. Making self-tapes.
Yeah.
If you're testing for something, they send the tape to the network. Because,
yeah.
I mean, again, like that thing where you'd go sit at the network's
so
main
nuts.
Offices next to the
it's
two
so nuts.
Next to the two people who are either going to not get or get the role that would, you know, change your life for the next 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
And you're just sitting next to each other, just hanging out.
It's absurd.
It's insane.
It's absurd.
It's so insane. And, you know, then somebody would, you know, they walk out and they have a packet with your contracts as you're trying to like, and you're like,
yeah, they're like, and just FYI, this is the next 6 years of your life if it happens.
And
6 years. Like they own you. Now,
and,
I use that term.
That part,
I certainly, but
see,
like, yeah.
That part never bothered me. Because I so desperately, probably because of how my life is, you know, just gone, I crave stability.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun. Wonderfuls, if you are a regular listener to the JV Club, it can come as no surprise that we are sponsored by BetterHelp. Oh, I'm so excited to have a sponsor who is a proponent of talking about and dealing with various mental health issues, and just also understanding that therapy is wonderful no matter what you're feeling, no matter how your life is. Happy, unhappy, lost, found, it's always good. I love therapy so much, and so I'm so happy to be telling you about BetterHelp. It is a customized online therapy. And you can do phone, video, even live chat sessions, and they will match you with a therapist in under 48 hours. Let me tell you, that is not a long period of time to wait, and it is so easy to change therapists if needed. And just to reiterate, it doesn't have to be about a specific traumatic moment that you need to go to therapy for. It's just about managing your life and using therapy as a tool in your toolbox. That is certainly the way I have looked at therapy for my entire adult life. So cannot recommend it more. BetterHelp also is way more affordable than many in-person therapies, so why don't you just see if it's for you? This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and the JV Club listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/JV Club. That's betterhelp.com/JV Club. Treat yourself right.
Mr. Robot Man, what are you doing?
I'm just taking one last look at my coworkers.
Every journey comes to an end.
Remember, Plek, the space will be with you, always.
Sorry, who are you again?
Master Kiarando.
Oh, right, sorry.
Just calling in.
Friendships will be tested.
Dar, you have to do it. You have to shoot Plek. Okay.
You shot him so fast.
Destinies will be fulfilled.
I've become a complete bird. I'm flying.
On April 28th, the saga starts concluding.
Guys, we don't have a choice. We have to put on a show.
We can do it in the old barn. We've got the costumes, we've got a stage. We can do it, you guys.
Mission to Zix, the final season on Maximum Fun.
Well, if you left home at 15, wait, let's back up on that for a second. Why so young? And to where? If it was all still alive.
So I, you know, my home life was just tumultuous. Mm-hmm. And I was an angsty kid, and so I left. And I, you know, I was almost right before my 15th birthday, and I spent a little while living sort of dipshittily on the streets in Hollywood with kids that I knew and sleeping in vans and under freeway passes. And my grandparents, who were the sweetest, kindest people in the world, were in Burbank. I could have gone there and they had a room for me. Was it part of it though?
Was the sort of like, I'm going to have this experience of being this kid?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. It had a lot more to do with sort of being angry and hurt. I didn't know this is where I should be, you know, like I'm going to show them. There was a sort of, you know, self-punishment to punish hopefully the people who were hurting me, that it would hurt them. I'm sure there was some, you know, Freudian strange thing happening.
There's not much you can do when you're young. When you're young and you want to do that, like, you kind of only have, like, the best you can do is take over control of your own life and then do something that your parents won't like. Like, there's not a whole lot of power you have other than that.
Somewhere in that year, I got my friend, a girl who became my girlfriend. I ended up moving in with her and her mother for a while, and that was a whole wild trip. They were this Hollywood, you know, she was a child star and had living this strange life with her, you know, Hollywood, you know, set mom. Mm. And I lived with them for like 6 months, and I showed up at the house one day and the mom came to the door and she's like, "You can't come in." And I was like, "Why?" She's like, "Because," and there had been this other kid hanging out in recent days and weeks. Uh-huh. And he had taken my spot.
He moved into your spot.
And the worst part was he was like a famous, this guy, about this. So he was a famous child karate martial artist. So here I was like, how do I challenge this guy? Because he was literally like a famous, like one of those like 6-year-olds, and was in like some, he was in a movie with like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone's ex-wife, Red Sonja. And so like he was this flipping, kicking, like, and then now, and now, and now he's not like a 6-year-old.
What a nightmare.
He's like a 15, 16 year old. And there I am. And I'm like, I was like, that actually, I think that's what got me into fighting. Cause I was like, I don't ever want to have, you know, the next time I confront a kung fu wielding child star.
I want to be able
to take him out. So I had to find another place to live. So then I was, you know, that place was gone.
That was like heartbreaking. Dickens by way of like.
Now that I think about it, I need to start writing some of this shit down.
So there
I was, and then I was in a band. And we were rehearsing at this, you know, shitty little rehearsal studio in Hollywood, like at the corner of Vine and Santa Monica, next door to that Army Navy surplus store.
Oh, yes.
And these guys were walking down the hallway, and we had had our, it was summer, so it was hot, and we had our door open to our, you know, rehearsal room. And these kind of, you know, middle-aged guys poked their head in, and they were like, hey, kid, you know, you sing? I'm like, yeah. Like, you want to, you know, we're having auditions down the hall for a television show. You want to come audition? I was like,
whoa.
I'm like, you guys are fucking pedophiles. Fuck off. And then the look on their faces, they were like, no, we're not. And they weren't. Turns out they weren't. They were television producers for a Disney Channel show called called Kids Incorporated. And that was my first job.
Yeah.
You know, an agent or a manager. And so, but yeah, you know, that's, it all happened that way. And so I tell kids, I'm like, I wish I, you know, I ended up learning about film and, you know, film theory and lighting and directing and writing later. I sort of, you know, for over the past several years, probably my early 30s, what I started doing was hiring professors from Film Institute and USC.
Yeah.
And what I'd do is I'd hire them over the summer because they were, you know, out of a job for the summer. And I'd say, hey, you want to, you know, you want to make a little extra cash and give me lessons for
That's
4 weeks.
That's so awesome.
And, you know, yeah. And then, and so, I, you know, there's no degree with it. And there's also, you know, you don't get quite the same experience of like, you know, you make a thesis film and you, you know, you have a group of other young filmmakers that you're working with. But I tell, I tell young actors, and don't be a theater major, please.
Yeah.
And learn how to do it all yourself.
Because,
you know, I just couldn't handle, I still like the lack of control just.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think even like less so, I mean, maybe, well, you certainly know better than I, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but it seems to a greater degree, because I think, you know, for all the things I rue about the internet, accessibility to media and stuff did change so much that I do feel like it helped kind of create a little bit more sense of, oh, I'm an actor, but I'm also entitled to learn how to do these other things or be good at these other things.
100%.
But I bet, I mean, I'm assuming when you were 15, 16, like an actor was an actor, a producer was a producer, a cinematographer was, you know, that there's a sense of sort of like, you don't cross the line, you're the talent. And that's, you know, that's very insidious. And it is, it's a value judgment that, you know, I perceived that before I even moved down here. Like, I didn't ever want to tell anyone. I was so glad to have other things I could describe myself as, an always added actor, like apologetically, like muttering it under my breath
at the end of
the statement, right? And so that says a lot that you know, that there would be this sort of, as a smart, creative person, that you would feel like you have to bury that down in there so that you're not judged for it.
I still do. Like, even if somebody doesn't know who I am or what I do, they're like, oh, what do you do? I'm like, I work in the entertainment industry.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like, oh, what do you do? I'm like,
this and that. Yeah, I get it. I get it. So were you going to high school regularly, even
sometimes,
when you dropped out and all that? I was going to say, it sounds like it might have been more of a drop-in.
Yeah, it was more of a drop-in. I was going to Fairfax. I got kicked out because I wasn't showing up.
Yeah.
But I ended up getting it all kind of back. You know, once I got that first job, and then, you know, I got, you know, I actually ended up hiring my sister's babysitter, who was 22 when I was 15, to be my set sitter, because I technically had to have like an adult guardian with me on set. Well, I didn't have anyone, so we faked it and said
God,
she was nobody asked.
Stories are great.
Nobody was like, she is. I'm like, I showed up with her and she was my adult, and nobody ever cared. So I paid her to, you know, I paid her to be my set sitter, and I then turned 15. I was 15, and then you know, at a certain point, I mean, I was like totally in love with her. It was this huge crush, and eventually, like, we ended up dating by the time I was like 16.
Yeah.
And so it was like this, you know, sort of whirlwind thing, and then I got a driver's license and a car, and I was like, oh wait, there's so many places I can go. I was a kid, and she was 20. I mean, she was 22, 23 at the time, and I think she realized that. Okay, this is nothing.
Yeah, the guy I've been dating,
and I think,
is jazzed because he just got his driver's license, so maybe I can let go. But also, like, again, you're thrust into this weird, like, you sort of catapult yourself out of your home life into a certain level of
adulthood.
Like,
the
adulthood, professional adulthulthood, but also like street adulthood. You know, there's sort of a lot going on there.
Yeah, it wasn't, I wasn't, you know, like, I wasn't sort of this naive 15, 16-year-old kid. I was living on my own and paying my own bills. And so,
yeah. Did you have a sense when you would sort of pop into high school, was there a sense of like, oh yeah, this is like, it's like going to a museum or a zoo or like
so
any
weird.
Other, like it just doesn't feel like it applies to me, but I know technically it's supposed to be me.
Yeah, it was, well, it was also really challenging because I was now at this point sort of conditioned to talk to adults
as peers. Yeah.
You know, like I was at work and we'd be talking about like, oh, do you want me to like, okay, so you're saying I go from over here to here and you're talking about scenes and the show that we were doing was, you know, there was singing and dancing. And so we'd be talking about choreography and camera movements. And
yeah.
So when I'd get into class, you know, some poor English teacher, I'd be like, well, you know, we should talk about, you know, why we're doing, like, why are we, you know, we should talk about why we're doing this. He's like, excuse me. I'm like, no, I just think it would be good for us to understand, like, you know, like, and he's like, you don't get to ask me that. I'm like, well, I'm taking this class, aren't I? Like, I mean, in my mind, I'm like, I paid to take this class, didn't I?
Yeah.
I pay my taxes. This is a public school. I don't understand.
Yeah.
And so there was all these, there was a lot of really like weird conversations of like, you don't get to ask me that. I'm like, what do you mean? If I walked into a store and bought some service, if I was going to go buy a TV at Best Buy, I'd be allowed to ask how the TV works.
Right.
What are your qualifications?
Right.
Why should you be teaching me this? Please explain. And that did not go over well.
Were you getting reinforcement from other young people that was cool? Or like, was there also a sense of like, oh my God, dude, you are awesome. You just totally asked the teacher. Like, I would never.
Oh, they just sort of, they were just, no, it was like,
more,
you know,
just confusion.
It was just more confusion. They were just like, what the fuck? What's happening right now? And yeah, and I didn't know any of them very well because I was sort of in and out. Like, I couldn't tell you. So I ended up graduating from high school in Burbank. And I honestly couldn't tell you, I don't think, anyone's name. I was so seldomly there. There was one girl I wish whose name I could remember because she was super cool. And I remember she lent me her dress one day to wear to school because I really liked, I don't know why.
Yeah.
I just really liked her. She was wearing like this very like, you know, 90s kind of Courtney Love.
Sure, like a baby doll
dress.
Kind of
yeah.
A,
and I was
yeah.
like, dude, that thing's rad. I want to rock that today.
Yeah.
Because I'd seen like Kurt Cobain doing it or something. And she's like, do it. I'll trade clothes with you. And she did. And then they subsequently were like, you can't be here in that. I'm like, why not?
Yeah.
They're like, you can't wear a dress to school. I'm like, says who?
Yeah.
But I can't remember her name. But she had dreadlocks and she was really cool. And I can't remember her name.
Well, this is an open call. We got to find this gal. Listen, I'm calling on the internet to find this woman.
If you went to Burroughs High School in 1993 or 4 or 5, 94 or 95, hit me up.
We got to find her. Now, let me ask you this, because I do have some pals in the biz who I think were also coming up around that same time. Who definitely were in, like, I just watched Soleil's documentary.
Yeah.
And certainly there were, you know, people that Soleil, were kind of
yeah,
in
we
that
were,
scene.
Yeah, that was all.
Yeah, I was
going to
ask,
friends.
Like, how much of that, because that also is such a wild, like,
I mean, Soleil,
like, yeah.
Soleil's amazing. I mean,
oh my God, I've only met her once and she introduced herself to me on a plane. And I was like,
that's Soleil.
What is happening? I love you so much. She's a joy. You get that from her film. You really do go. She's very special.
Yeah, we've all known each other since we were like 14, 13, 14 years old. And there was all of us. Me and Brittany were obviously really, really close. But Brandis too. And those were all of our friends. And so we sort of saw all of these positives and negatives. But Soleil was, I mean, even when we were, I remember when Soleil, you know, Soleil said to me, she's like, I want to write this movie. I'm like, cool, man. She's like, let's do it. We're going to write it in 2 weeks. And I was like, I don't think I can. And literally a month later, she wrote it. I mean, that's how she met her husband.
Yeah.
That's how she met Jason. And she wrote this movie. And then all of a sudden it was being produced and Heather was in it and Danny was in it and everybody, all the homies were in it. And
yeah.
She's always been that way.
Yeah.
And she's never, She's one of those people. I mean, just amazingly, never been jaded. You know, it was interesting because I haven't watched it yet.
I mean, it'd be such a different experience for you than it was for me, you know.
But I remember, I was thinking about it because I know that there was sort of, they were talking about Brandis a lot in it. And, you know, the thing about what happened to Jonathan was, you know, this business, he started out, you know, as a kid, very famous and had all this success. And then one day, I mean, literally one day, they just turned off the switch on him. And I remember, how hard it was for him, because he was actually a really good fucking actor.
Yeah.
And he just sort of, you know, went through this phase where he wasn't a kid, he wasn't quite an adult, and it was, if he had had, and I don't know, and this is the part I'm talking about, if he had had the stability, he had plenty of money, you know, he had a nice house, but there was something else. The emotional aspect of it, I remember, you know, every once in a while, we were all buddies and we'd hang out, but I'd also see him occasionally, like we'd all be auditioning for the same thing. And I remember, you know, during pilot season, Brandis would show up to like studio tests, network tests, you know, and have a t-shirt on that said fuck pilot season while testing for the show. I mean, and there was a sense of like, fucking hey guys, I've been doing this for so long and now here I am and it doesn't matter. And that's the hard part about our business.
Yeah.
Is this unlike any other job, you work hard, you put in the time, you put in the effort, and you will sort of climb the ladder. And this is true for everyone in the entertainment industry, not just actors. It's true for writers and producers and directors. There is no guarantee or reward for hard work or time put in. You don't hit, you know, a tenure. You don't, you know, that. And so one day it can all just be sort of taken away. And you know, it's one of the things I talk about with my friends a lot is like, why are we all like, that's why I love guys like, you know, I love guys like Seth Rogen. Yeah. And that whole crew and
Judd Apatow. They lift each other up and they want to give that sense of community and
And I harp on my friends for years. I'm like, guys, why are we not just, we should just meet. We should just meet and come up with ideas. And if there's 10 of us who haven't fucking write something that each has a role for each of us and whoever's the best person to direct it or write it. And because we get so, because of this, the design of the system, sometimes we get so segregated from each other that we forget how much, not power in the sense of like, you know, authoritarianism, but power in the sense of autonomy. If we all work together and we're like, let's create, let's do something, let's make it happen. Let's, you know, that's that what I would tell everybody is find friends and just, you know, we've all had that experience where you work on something, you build a relationship with the cast or the crew, and like, we're going to stay in touch. And then life happens and you don't. But if we did more of that, and you know, I think it would be beneficial.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, I've worked you into my web. Look, this podcast guarantees friendship for life. So you are in it now.
I love it. I love it. I'm part of the JV club.
You're part of the JV club. Well, this is, I mean, everything you said, it resonates so hard with me. And two, you know, that era, I'm so blown away by, again, this sort of, I'm just so blown away because I was such a fucked up mess when I was a teenager. And you're supposed to be, right? You're supposed to be, whatever that looks like for you. And the idea of being someone like Jonathan, who, you know, those people that we are sort of cry for in this very specific artistic way, because God, how many times do we need to be reminded that money is not enough, or that it's almost worse? Like the existential crisis, when that hits you, if you're quote unquote rich and successful, but you feel like garbage, it's worse, I think, than being sort of trying to scrape together this. And like, there's something that's so dark about, I should feel happy and I can't complain to anyone because everyone will tell me to fuck myself.
Yeah.
That is a very isolating thing that you don't necessarily have. And I don't mean to overgeneralize, but you don't necessarily have that same experience if you are struggling the same way your peers are struggling and you've never really gotten that success, like that's a different yeah. kind of suffering. And it's really heartbreaking.
Well,
everybody's
reality is their own.
Yeah.
And it's real. It's like somebody said it to me once. It's really not fair for somebody with two broken legs to look at somebody with one broken leg and say, "Hey, you don't know what pain is."
Right.
I don't fucking know. My leg was broken and it hurts pretty fucking bad. It doesn't make, just because, you know, the other person may have it worse.
Yeah.
It doesn't diminish your own reality and your own pain. And I think we do that a lot. You know, I think we do that a lot. We always sort of, you know, we put things in boxes and
yeah.
Are your podcasts always this sort of existential?
I mean, they can be. It depends on like how heady the person I'm talking to is, and these are my favorites.
I thought we were going to talk about the horse scene and the horse trying to get up and you know, how late it got.
Well, I talk about teen years, so yeah. Some people have like, you know, pretty lighthearted teen years, but most of us have, you know, stuff that we just go, Jesus Christ. But so anyway, just to put a button on this, the idea of being a young person accountable in an adult way, in an adult world that is a huge market with tons of money at stake, and then flirting with the like the clubbing scene while you also still have to show up for a grown-up job at 5 a.m. the next day, because you're also in this thing that's paying you an exorbitant amount of money, and you have it's been instilled in you, there is no second grip standing by who can be called in. There is no key makeup person who can be called in because you're sick. If you're not there, chances are the entire group will not work that day unless they can shuffle around. If you're in everything, like, you're in a lot of trouble, kiddo. So the idea of flirting with all of that is terrifying to me. The idea of like, that's a lot. And then you're trying to go to college too. Like, that is a lot. That's a lot for a 35-year-old, you know?
It's a wild existence.
Jeez.
Yeah, man.
But look at you. Like, you're so wonderful to be around. And we just clicked the second we met. It was like, I love this person. I see you. You see me. Like, joy to work with. You're such a community player in that way. I'm so, like, I don't mean this condescending. Like, I'm so proud that you are this person who's had this, like, very textured, you know, life that's touched all these different things, and that you're just, like, you're so wonderful to work with. I mean, that's really important.
You. Well, dude, I mean, look, it's I mean, I told you this on set, but you're magic, man.
Here we go. Finally, we get to the part that I look forward to in the podcast, where you tell me how great I am.
Yeah, well, I could do
it. It's been a long way coming.
I could do it for a while because I'm sure you're feeling it, because everybody who watches the show just goes, she's bananas funny and good. And I kept trying to say, no, I think she's benefiting from the writing, because I was like, she can't be that much funnier than everybody else. But I think you are. I think you actually are just that much funnier than everybody else.
Oh,
but yeah, man. No, thank you. Thank you. Because it was, I mean, have you done a lot of like half hour comedy?
Well, I come from comedy.
I mean,
so
I know you
I
come
say,
from.
Yeah,
I know you
yeah.
come
so
from comedy.
That's like doing live stuff or doing stuff that has that energy to it is very comfortable to me. It definitely took like, and I'm sure it still happens. I'm sure I'd still audition for stuff, and people are like, "Someone needs to tell her this isn't a multi-camera." I think that went away. Like, but it took me like 6 years of realizing, like, oh, smaller, oh, even smaller. Just because I came from sketch. Like, what are you going to do?
Right, and so
even
for me,
though I was a theater major,
yeah,
which served me not at all, as you know, but as you mentioned earlier, but yeah, I mean, like, so that feels comfortable for me, and it felt, and also I love working with kids, and I love the music of it, and I mean, it was just one of those perfect. It really was like, and I've said this before, but like, I did have that moment where I actually said, like. And I'm not saying the pandemic happened to me, but I 100% kept saying, this feels too good to be true. It's down the street from my house. Like, I'm in love with every person who was working on the show. It's too good to be true. And then it was like, and we're shutting down.
I know. And I've told Karen a thousand times, this is my dream job.
And it starts at the top, right? She is, she's so clear. Once you've spent any time around her, you're like, oh, I'm going to like everyone else around here, because it starts with that's the energy she wants around her. And that's, she gets a say in that. And everybody is that kind of person, therefore. You know?
Let's fingers, toes, everything.
I know.
Everything crossed. I hope it happens.
Everyone's like, listen, we got to do, we don't want to let go of either Boone or Summer. So I guess they have to end up together. Like, there has to be some,
I'm telling you,
there's some reason that they're both in orbit, no matter what happens.
There's a beautiful, like even a better odd couple pairing of Boone and Summer. And I'm like, I'm telling you, like,
yeah.
Season three, it'll be the funniest thing ever when they finally...
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm telling you. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. And if not, it'll be a spinoff.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Max Fun Drive's almost here. It starts on Monday, May 3rd, ends on May 14th, and it's the best time to support the shows you love. Here are some folks like you sharing what Max Fun and our shows mean to them.
Most importantly, it's meant community.
And just thanks for hanging out, making joke 'em ups, and making my week a little bit brighter.
So, thanks, Max Fun, for making me a better person and making sure that I'm surrounded by better people.
Thanks again for all you do. Love supporting Max Fun, and keep it up.
Come back Monday, May 3rd for more details from your favorite hosts. We'll have some of the best episodes of the year, special Max Fun Drive thank you gifts, and maybe a few surprises. That's Monday, May 3rd. Until then.
I have this last thing that I do. It just takes a little bit, but it's sort of the way of closing out the podcast. But it's, I play this MASH game, Mansion, Apartment, Shack, House. And that is a, you don't have to do anything except just answer off the cuff.
Okay.
And it's me asking you things that you like. And this is still something that is played today by young people. You probably missed out on some of it, although I would say high school is maybe a little late for it to be happening anyway. But it was very much like a way of killing time for me in grade school and junior high, where it's like, okay, what kind of, name three cars that you would drive. Okay. Now name the three different amounts of kids you would have. Okay. Now name three guys you want to marry. Like, it was very that. So, but I'm doing all the work. Basically what I'm looking at is I'm going to come up with these categories, and it's like we're building this alternate universe for you.
Okay.
And at the end, there's like an eeny, meeny, miny, mo process where I'm like, all right, Eric, this is this whole alternate universe life that you're living with all of these wonderful things that you love. So that's sort of where I'm going with it. So for now, and you don't have to like, I see. I mean, I want to make sure you know, like, you don't have to write anything down. Nothing is required of you except the willingness to think off the top of your head. Number one, three bands that you, living or dead, I don't care if they still exist or they broke up or whatever, three bands that you would love to play with.
Red Hot Chili Peppers, Faith No More, and Foo Fighters.
Okay, great. Three crushes slash, now this is alternate universe, it could be a character from a film, it could be a character from a book, comic book, superhero, animal, I don't care. Three people that you have this alternate universe kind of steamy romance with.
Okay, one would be Monica Bellucci. Two would be Deborah Harry. And three would probably be Billy Porter.
Great, great, great. Okay, next one. Three foods that, if in this alternate universe, everything is equal. There's no calories, there's no sugar, there's no murder, there's no ecological anything. Whatever you want, snap of your fingers, what would you love to have in perpetuity that, like, it causes you zero harm?
Panda Express.
Two more.
Korean barbecue.
Great.
Pan Express again.
Great.
In all honesty, it would be Panda Express. It would be Panda Express for all three.
I'm trying to think when last time I had Panda Express was. This is very exciting to know that the love you have for it. Next one. Three movies that you can jump into, and it's like you're going on vacation inside the movie. So it's not that you're reliving the plot. It's like, but you can get in that world and just have the feeling of that movie whenever you want.
Say that one more time. I couldn't hear that. You cut out for a second.
Basically, like, you jump into a movie. You can jump, three movies you can jump into. So it'd be like Harry Potter, but it could also be Goodfellas.
Three movies I could jump into?
And nothing bad is going to happen to you. You're just in that world.
That's easy.
Great.
Ghostbusters.
Great.
North Shore.
Great.
And Thrashing. You'll have to look them up.
Okay, great. All right. Tell me, what would you describe your mood as in one word when you woke up this morning?
Happy.
Okay, great. All right. Will you, while I quickly do this, please tell people where they can watch Country Comfort and also anything else of your many, many endeavors that they should check out because you are wonderful and where they can follow you and stuff.
Yes. Everybody should start watching Country Comfort this moment, right now. Just quit your job. Don't do anything else. Leave your kids in the car. Watch Country Comfort. On Netflix.
And if you're a person who's like, I don't like multicam comedies, like they're just dumb, I'm telling you, give it an episode or two and you will be like, this goes down so easy. It is so funny. Everyone is so good.
If you think that you don't like lighthearted, sort of sweet, cute, don't worry. This show is dark.
Because
edgy.
I would have been like, oh, this isn't for me. And now I'm like, it's my favorite show.
Yeah, no, this show is, you know, if you're not one for like family comedy, this is the perfect show for you because there's drugs, there's sex, there's violence. And if you don't like those things, drugs and sex and violence, then this is the perfect show for you because there's singing and music and there's love and it's sweet. And so it magically has everything.
Agreed.
You can follow me on, I only have a couple, I think I only have Instagram and Twitter, and it's just at Eric Balfour. It's pretty easy.
Very easy, very worth it. I am excited to give you your alternate universe MASH life. First of all, I want to congratulate you for the vacation shack. Mansion, apartment, shack, house. I don't decide it. It's inside Thrashing. So I don't know what that looks like for the Thrashing like shack. Seems like it's going to be like a skate shack
It looks like the Daggers clubhouse.
There you go. What are you going to get? A mansion? Gross. It's like, you don't want that. You want this like badass little shack. So you got a shack in Thrashing. You are sharing that shack with the supremely badass Debbie Harry. You are unsurprisingly having all the Panda Express you could ever possibly want. And
fantastic.
I'm talking no bloating. I'm talking no fat. I'm talking no nothing.
It's all good.
And you still have plenty of energy to play with the Foo Fighters.
Oh, great.
That is what's happening. In your
Dave Grohl time.
World. I know. My dear friend, this has been so much fun. What a treat. This is
Thank
coming
so
out.
This
got, I'm turning this around. It's coming out tomorrow so that we can get those
Country
Comfort viewers. So I'll send you stuff. Thank you for sending me your picks. And everybody listening, thank you so much. And I will talk to you next time on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Hey, remember when we could save kittens from trees or lunch on skyscrapers, bring the villains to their knees? Maybe we should. Someplace new and build time machines to go and get us back. Back.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.